Well, either way, the applause has been thunderous. I'm absolutely winded from all the roses just being shuttled into our room.
Oh, man, the fact that y'all actually seemed to like our last episode and listenership really jumped in the last week, I'm happy. So.
I was like, we don't need a plan. No. Brian was like, okay, time to strategize.
Yeah, you're like, this is the strategy. The arrow's pointing up, baby.
But razzle dazzle, baby, razzle dazzle. What's that from? Oh.
Chicago?
Well, no, not the song Razzle Dazzle, but Vince Vaughn says it in a movie.
Probably like Swingers.
I've never seen Swingers.
Razzle Dazzle, baby. Razzle Dazzle. Oh, like I think it's Wedding
the breakup.
Crashers.
Okay.
Or the breakup. I know you liked the breakup a lot.
Listeners, I do. Listeners, if you know what movie this is from, feel free to hit our message board.
Yeah, I mean, I know for sure Come on the Kick Drum is from the breakup.
Gary, come.
Yeah, come.
On the Kick Drum. Come Gary. Come.
Yeah.
But you're not Gary, you're Brian.
You're Julian Goza. And this is the Guantanamo Bay's podcast.
A Cuban cousin, Kiki.
And boy, are we ever Cuban.
And are we ever Kiking.
And are we ever cousins, first of
all. Are we ever. And how.
How's your week been? You know, you kind of came in like a windstorm into my place, whipped up a nice little sausage and rice dish while you went to my kitchen, while you were like listening in on your grad school seminar, you know, that was happening while you were cooking.
I don't know if you saw what I packed the ingredients with, but I had like a tall Tupperware cup, and I put little Campari tomatoes at the bottom, and then some spinach.
Oh, I did see that, yeah.
And then at the very top, a little container of chili oil, and then I capped it. And on my way out, I was like, I'm such a mom. Like, at my best, I am a mom.
Yeah, at your best, you're a very attentive mom, for that matter. And I see you... You maturing is you becoming more motherlike.
Wow.
Yeah, I noticed.
Let's unpack that.
I know. Well, here's the thing. You have matured a lot in the last... I mean, who has in the last couple of years? I mean, getting older is part of it, but I think being thrown in the river of dog shit, the world's thrown also...
Fighting the devil off my back.
Yeah, that'll grow some hairs in your chest. But these hairs...
It has. I haven't shaved in a long time due to popular demand.
And these hairs have turned into mother's milk now.
Gross.
I know.
Oh, this is going to be a lot of details, Mom. Skip ahead. When I was in San Diego, I hooked up with a very beautiful man. Nice. And he loved my chest. And he like, oh, I think I told you this. And he was like shaking my chest. Like, look at it. Isn't it just like such a nice chest? And I was like, dude, like, it's my chest. I don't feel that way about my chest.
But you're also like, you bet your ass it is. You know, if you like it, that gasses me up. And now
I felt very maternal because he kind of sucked on my nipples. Is this what you want? Are you not entertained, audience?
And now you're here making a sausage and rice. Isn't this a great like allegory for the things that moms do? You know,
feed.
Like,
we feed people.
And the stuff that they did that they try to suppress, and you know, just so that we all think they're the perfect mom in the you know, in the kitchen doing what they do to support a family. And sometimes supporting a family means you get your tits sucked every once in a while. Whether it's for pleasure or for nourishment, you know?
Anyway, he was a Libra, so...
What does that mean?
They come, they eat, they leave. To quote Bug's Life. Air signs, dude. Y'all are fickle. Fickle, fickle foes and friends.
You know, for as little kind of legitimacy as I give to what astrology does to predetermine your life and your personality, I won't disagree that that's like not a bad characterization. I'm not fickle.
I think
I'm very loyal. But
I think you could argue astrology determines your destiny more than it does your personality.
Okay. But what I was going to say was... I commit. I'm loyal. I'm
yes.
Yeah. I feel like I'm more...
But there is like... Yeah.
I know.
Not... And it's not like a pointed indifference. It's just an inherent indifference, and I envy it. I appear that way, I think, to some of my female friends, but I'm not. I'm not indifferent.
No,
I want those bitches to know that I am not indifferent.
You're so in your head about all the...
About my indifference? About like my...
Your perceived indifference? And just micro interactions in general, you know?
Yeah, that's a lot of work, honey.
It's impossible for you to not read into that stuff, because it's kind of part of... who you are in a way.
Absolutely. It's called narcissism, and I wrote about it plenty in my last paper.
You know, okay, so you're a semester now into your grad school.
I'm a quarter.
Yeah,
into
quarter.
My...
You know, some change. But, you know, first of all, it's been cool to see you adapt and, you know, recommit. And also the stuff that you learn that I see you applying now into conversation. So if you want to give a little overview of your first quarter, how that went, and some self-diagnoses. If you have any diagnoses you got for me, feel free to throw them my way.
That was the bulk of my first quarter, was just figuring myself out a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And like labeling certain defense mechanisms that I resort to. And it is helpful because these things are passed down generationally. Mm-hmm. You could skip ahead on this too, Mom. and in becoming aware of those things, you make efforts towards not repeating the pattern. I don't want to say breaking the pattern because that's so final. And I don't know if you ever mm-hmm. could fully transcend mm-hmm. Inherited trauma and neuroses and whatever else. But there's a way to call it what it is, and from there to grow.
And manage it.
And manage it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was with a friend who is very energetic and gets angry very easily. And we had just gone through a really tough camping trip where it was just raining constantly. And
this was this weekend.
That was this weekend. This was yesterday. And yeah. I'm dropping him off and he's just like raging, you know, just howling at the wind for no reason. And I felt so...
About what?
Calm. It was genuinely annoying for me, but I was also just, I just noticed how passive I was in relation to
him.
What
was he raging about, though?
A ton of different things.
Just general rage.
Yeah, just general rage. Different, he was venting about dynamics between him and some of the other people on the trip, as people sure. do at the end of a trip. Yeah. Everyone talks shit about everyone.
But there's like sometimes a fun way of doing it, and then like kind of a scary, angry way. Would you define it as... It
wasn't well, scary. I think you're trying to set up like a binary. I don't know about fun versus like scary and angry, but he was just very physically ratcheted up. Mm-hmm. And I felt so placid and open. And I was like, wow, like I feel like before this annoyance would have actually had more of a physical effect on my body.
Whip you into a frenzy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we're just shouting at each other. And I was just able to like just let him, you know, run out of steam.
Don't you also feel sometimes too, though, that people balance each other out? And when someone's really high strung, it kind of forces the other person to be more grounded.
Ideally.
But
there are pairs that where that's not the case, my friend.
Mm, yeah.
But like, I'm lucky enough to clock it and separate myself if I notice it.
You know, devotees to the pod, just based on anyone who listened to the last episode, which seems like a lot of you. Would know that I just did a play that
I dropped out, guys.
He dropped out, but honestly, probably a good thing that you did because it would have been a lot.
Again, because I've grown to know myself more, and it would have just freaked me out.
I'm not gonna lie, you made the right call, even though I missed.
And something about a musical, like having to turn out a musical in such a quick amount of time, is more daunting to me.
So here's the thing: it was that daunting. It was that painful, that laborious, that stressful, and I am playing against a guy, you know, for the whole play who was also coming into this blind. We only had two rehearsals with the cast, and we're both hitting stress level fuck, you know.
I saw it on the opening night, and that wasn't apparent at all.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
I promise.
I mean, thank you, and I was stressed out of my
you
goddamn
mind. You guys equally held your own.
Thank you. And so when we did our first run through with the cast, we only had two actual run throughs with the cast. We learned the show in a week, complicated show.
Two. That's crazy.
We had two actual runs with
Brian. You're a star. That's so difficult.
Thank you. But we also were taught, even in that previous rehearsal, stuff that wasn't correct. So during the run through, the director's now being like, oh, well, all the stuff that you learned while we weren't here, it's actually this.
Oh my God.
And my poor partner, I look at him and I'm stressed as fuck. I look at him and he goes, I'm having a really hard time not having a physical reaction to this. And I see.
I love how therapeutic he is with himself.
I mean, and we've been going off each other the whole time. And the ironic part that this is like a duo role. It's like we play twins. So it'd be nice if the person I had in front of me was also in the last show. But now it's like the person I have in front of me is just as blind as I am. So I look to him. He's like, I'm having a hard time not having a physical reaction. And I see tears welling in his eyes. Instantly, I snap into the most calm and the most confident and poised. And it could have just easily been me.
But in that circumstance, mm-hmm. it serves... You're trying to reach an end goal. Right. Whereas like a toxic relationship, they're not working towards the shared goal of like, we're putting on a musical.
Right.
So there is that difference.
And I'm wondering too if like, you know, if the scales tip just the other way and now I'm the one who's like overwhelmed and stressed and I'm the one who's like... You know, I'm
and
having
then
a
he's
physical
your
reaction.
Rock.
And then he might have been my rock. You know, it's like that shit. And that's what I feel is so common. I just see that complimentary.
You made a lifelong buddy in him.
Yeah, at the
even
very least.
Even if you're not close, you know, just that experience.
Yeah, we'll always be able to look at each other and be like, wasn't that some shit?
Yeah.
And that's what plays and musicals ultimately do, and that's why I like them a lot.
So was it as sold out as it was the first night?
Yeah. Ultimately, you know, Friday was probably like the weakest show, like audience-wise and show-wise, but then it closed super strong. Saturday was just a hit. Hong got to see the Saturday one.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and then went out with the cast afterwards. And so, yeah, a few of those people I will be like, you know, those are friends now. Mm. And hey, maybe one day they'll be guests here. Who knows?
Nice.
Yeah.
You mentioned Twins. I was at a movie today. I saw Late Night with the Devil.
You saw Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
They're showing it at the New Beverly at 11 a.m.
How
on
great
a Monday.
Would that be? Yeah.
No, but I walked by these two little twins that were maybe 3 years old, like these two little boys in matching hoodies. And they took
when they're that young, they're always going to be matching because the mom's like all about it.
It was just adorable. Yeah. And they posed right in front of the Ghostbusters Frozen so Empire cute, poster. Yeah. Like that was like kind of holographic. I don't know. I just had a moment where I was just like, wow, to be alive.
Yeah. Kids will make you hopeful because they're so fun. And,
yeah.
And they love life so much before it beats them down. So you want to protect them because you're like, I want to create a world where this kid can just keep being as sweet as they are now.
And seeing their dad want to take the photo, like that's another thing this education has done to my brain. It's like I'm
the presence of a father.
Well, I look so closely now in public at the relationship between a child and their parents.
It's so apparent sometimes.
Yeah.
And people have their good days and bad days, but sometimes you're just like, wow, good, like, and not to judge good or bad. It's just like, okay, this person is lacking in these areas.
Yeah.
And I know I'm the childless guy judging a parent, but
yeah, I find it's just because they're not able to regulate their own mood, you know, and so that will,
which is most people's problem,
fuck up a child. Yeah,
that's most people's problem.
Yeah, and the work is never over.
You know who some people have problems,
and you know where the work is never over,
in Cuba,
Guantanamo Bay specifically.
Yes, you know, for us being named the Guantanamo Bays. There's not a ton of news that often comes out of the prison facility at Guantanamo Bay. Serial, the podcast in its fourth season now, which has had a lot of impact in literally overturning convictions, swaying public opinion. They just started a series on Guantanamo Bay. You listened to the first two episodes. I just listened to most of the first episode right before we recorded. And I hope this just blows the whole lid wide open.
I don't know what they're working towards beyond like things we already know, which is like, yeah, it was a place of torture.
I'll bet that's episodes 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, like our introduction to the place as they describe it is like, as you said, it's like a spring break Mecca. Like soldiers are there like literally drinking pina coladas, hooking up with each other.
So let's talk about a little bit of what we heard in the early days of this new serial series on Guantanamo Bay. And a little segment that we like to call News from the Motherland, since our mothers are from Cuba. It's the motherland, baby. So, on this episode, we got some early stats on Guantanamo Bay, the prison facility as it is. A stat that sticks out to me. Currently, 30 prisoners are there. There have been 780 over the years. And it costs $13 million per prisoner per year to keep this operation running.
Even though for like our defense budget, that's nothing. I mean, or whatever, Homeland Security.
No, but just first of all, when you consider, you know, what is the actual function of the facility, and we'll kind of talk about that in a little bit, but when you talk about, you know, efficiency, right? Because no matter how you swing it, 13 times 30 is 390. So $390 million a year for these prisoners. Even in the context of a defense budget, they know where $390 million goes to. So whether you could allocate that, you know, if Gitmo's this fucking useless, let's get it either, you know, you're probably never going to take money out of the defense budget, but let's not continue to operate what is becoming a less and less useful facility, which wasn't even that useful in the first place.
Not to mention, how did they obtain it? Like, do you know?
Like the facility?
Yeah, because I thought we weren't chummy in the least with the Cuban government. So how do we get that parcel of land?
I'm sure it was just a massive contract. And you know, maybe in some ways it was... And I don't know the story, so I don't want to armchair quarterback it too much. But just in the context of the U.S. wanted a nearby but offshore facility for quote-unquote enhanced interrogation, torture, of people who, before counterterrorism and intelligence has gotten this good... They were just like kind of making guesses, you know? And counterterrorism's improved a lot. That's why you don't see as many suicide bombings. That's why the U.S. was able to tell Russia before this latest terrorist attack, hey, there's a terrorist attack happening at a concert coming up. And Russia ignored it. So
a terrorist attack in Russia at a concert?
It just happened a week ago.
And we told them?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that big of us?
Well, you know, there's rules of war, you know, and if you pick up, and there's also like an international global fight against terrorism. Even the U.S. and Russia, even though they literally had skirmishes in Syria, they were technically there to fight ISIS.
They're like, but fuck the Yakuza.
Yeah, right. It's like there's so yeah, there's always, and you know, and also there's rules of war and counterterrorism and limiting civilian casualties as part of that. So the U.S. picks up intelligence, or any country.
That could limit Russian casualties.
In a civilian sense.
That makes me believe in, like, a global order.
Well, technically there has been. And that is what the Axis, you know, is trying to disrupt. So, I mean, this is the beginnings of, I'm hoping not World War III, but certainly World Alignment III, you know, in the modern context, you know. So, I guess all that to say, in the introduction to this episode of Serial 2, besides just the numbers of, you know, the exorbitant amount it takes to run Guantanamo Bay and how kind of useless it is, the scariest part to me, and this is mentioned very early in the first episode, is a merch collaboration with Disney where you could buy t-shirts with Minnie Mouse and shirts that had phrases like, it don't get mo better than this.
The shirt with Minnie Mouse says Guantanamo Bay, and I think it is spelled B-A-E.
No.
And I do think that should have been our merch. That's such bullshit.
You know what? The IP, or the patent on Steamboat Willie version of Mickey has now expired.
There we go. We're still in the game.
Yeah, we're still
but
in
I
the game.
But I wanted Minnie.
I know.
How about Steamboat Minnie?
When did Minnie first, when's her IP expire? When's her patent expire?
I don't know. But
or copyright, I guess,
Honey Pooh, yeah. Blood and Honey. Honey Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. You know that horror film that features a guy dressed as Winnie the Pooh because now he's in the public domain?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just ordered part three of that. Apparently the second one that just came out is really good.
Man, I didn't know that they were going to make another.
So it's funny to see like these Disney characters get reappropriated for like darker context.
For darker purposes, yeah. I mean, that is hilarious.
I want Guantanamo Bay merch.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there.
No. I mean, like, I want merch from the camp.
Oh, no. I was like, but Julian, we're called the Guantanamo
when
Bay.
When I'm not busy lusting after the homeless aesthetic, I'm online shopping for Guantanamo
Bay. I'm voraciously shopping for all the corners of the saddest corners of the earth.
For torture camp t-shirts.
For a little Margaritaville shot glass.
You know, I haven't even so much as Googled the merch that they describe in the episode, but I will.
I like how you say that, like you're surprised at yourself that you hadn't Googled it yet.
Kind of.
Like, how did I not do that as soon as I heard that on the pod? So, should we meet some of the characters in this episode of Serial?
Yeah. Well, the one that's prominently featured in the first episode is named Raul.
Yes.
Who
yes.
is a U.S. soldier
mm-hmm.
that served in, let's see if I get this right, not Bosnia. Bosnia? Somewhere in there. Iraq. And then Guantanamo. And was gay.
Yes. And he was their liaison into the island. And you know what's it's crazy.
The host of the podcast. Yes. He was their liaison.
So the host of this podcast had visited Guantanamo Bay in 2015 when the idea was hopefully stuff is kind of winding down here. They show up. It's very commercialized. And they meet this guy, Raul. Now, 9 years later, he's a civilian, and a lot of these soldiers that they talked to back then are civilians now, so they're able
that
to,
are living here in the States.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So now that they've transitioned to civilian life, they're now more open to talking about what their true feelings were as it relates to Guantanamo. And Raul, who the episode titled Sweet Baby Raul, I mean, he sings like a canary. And you know,
I told you I had an idea for a self-help book called Sing Like a Canary, How to Be Your Most Audacious Self.
Go ahead. I mean, tell me about this. How to be your most audacious self.
Yeah, because like sometimes I'll say something that's like almost with too much candor and it freaks people out. But it's like, you know what? Own it. Like you said it. It was truthful. You know, if it didn't come from a place of malice and it was articulate, then like that's worth celebrating. Sing like a canary.
It's just so funny because sing like a canary has such a snitch connotation to it. So people are going to think you're like how to snitch or how to tell on people or something like
especially
that.
Especially with like how to live an audacious life.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how to be hunted down by the government.
Yeah, or how to, you know, cozy up to the government so that they'll pay for a secure life for you while you send all your friends to jail. Sing Like a Canary. You know, that reminds me of how in The Office, Michael Scott always had an idea for a book called Somehow I Manage. and he'd be like, and I'm shrugging. Funny. He like even described the cover. He's like, and my sleeves rolled up and I'm shrugging, you know, looking at the book. But that was always his idea. So I like that.
That's a great title.
Your version of that. What are your, you know, you've heard more of Serial this Guantanamo edition than I have. What are your big bullet points that, you know?
Well, the amount of gay sex that was happening both there and on the naval base in Iraq, according to Raul,
yes,
got me scintillated. I know they're like, you know, the front line of like a terrible regime, but, you know, Puerto Rican soldiers were also there. So he talks about like the sex that happened between the U.S. troops and the Puerto Rican troops.
Yeah.
And that's how I was conceived, guys.
It's so funny because when I read the, or, you know, you're like, you have to listen to this and like, yeah, it's relevant to what we do. But then when I heard the amount of gay sex that was in it, I was like, I think Julian was really into this for different reasons.
Oh, 100%. I want to play you this clip actually.
Okay.
His virginity at Bagram.
I became super gay there. Like, I would get my hair dyed black. I would get my eyebrows waxed because on the German side, they had a Russian-ran barber salon. And so we would go in there and get facials, and all. It was crazy.
He was talking about Iraq, but how funny that like he would go to the German base and they had a spa.
Yeah, it makes like, perfect sense too that like oh no, you don't want to get tweezed on the American side. You want to go to the German side for sure.
That for me is like a good use of a military budget. Like bleach their assholes. Let's go.
Like I don't even think you're wrong. I mean the army does have. There's even a King of the Hill episode about this where Hank gets a haircut from his friend as a civilian, so he has to pay the army bill. And when you calculate like the amount of resources that go into that haircut, the bill comes out to like $9,000 and stuff like that. So
that's funny.
Now he has to owe the army.
That's an expensive haircut.
Exactly. And that's so funny because when he finds out he's stuck with that bill and he walks by, there's like a staff sergeant that's like, "It is a very nice haircut." And he just like walks out.
It's so fabulous funny. Haircut, honey.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, that it's funny. While you were in the other room cooking, I heard that exact spot. My ears perked up and I'm like, Julian probably fell head over heels for this shit like right off the bat.
Well, and there's of course a long history of, you know, gay shit and the military.
In the Navy.
I mean, like drag came from, you know, a bunch
uniforms.
Of uniforms. Well, and it came from a bunch of gay guys that had served in World War II and then moved to San Francisco. I mean, that that kind of fomented.
I did not know.
Like the modern gay rights movement as we know it.
Bunch of World War II vets.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Greatest Generation?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, give them their due, you know? The Greatest Generation had gays. Get over it. Everyone thinks the Greatest Generation means a sailor kissing his woman when he returned home from Japan. It's like, no, there was a lot more than just that person that defined.
Bring back
that
the draft. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, we could all use a little growing up, I think,
and more gay shit. I feel like the draft is like totally correlative to like gay stuff happening.
Man, the irony that people are like, man, he's gotta grow up and grow some hairs on his chest. He's gotta go to war and shoot a guy. And it's like, no, you're literally sending your son
to fall in love with his bunkmate.
Yeah, yeah. Like you are not getting.
My mom used to threaten to send me to military academy, and now in retrospect,
you're like, please.
I mean, at the time, it terrified me, but in retrospect, I would have had a ball.
Yeah,
or several.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover here. You know, when it comes down to, you know, this there's a few more news stories about Cuba that we want to come down. I mean, there's going to be a 60-minute story on the details of Havana Syndrome as that emerges more and more are coming to light. You know, the on and off again relationship we have with it.
I was thinking about it. Havana Syndrome would be a fantastic drag name. Like, I could use that as my drag
Ooh,
name.
Ooh, you are so
Havana
right.
Syndrome.
Havana Syndrome.
Isn't that such a good
Because it's
one?
Also like Havana, you know, like.
Yeah, Havana Syndrome, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drag queens love wordplay.
They do.
Yeah.
Especially like, you know, pseudo-ethnic or like cultural wordplay.
Exactly.
Especially if it's relevant to what you do.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can't just be like, you know, Queen Africa and just be like a white person. Yeah.
Right. There's a queen named Kimchi that's Korean and right.
Right. Jujubee.
Jujubee. You know?
Yeah. A classic. Okay. yeah, that's, you know what, you're like, I have this thing I want to say about Havana Syndrome locked and loaded. And I was like, what is it? You're like, I'm not telling you. As soon as you said that, I was like, that was it.
But 60 Minutes is
going to do a whole expose.
I don't know how definitive it is as an expose, but they have linked this intelligence group in Russia that's comprised of assassins and government saboteurs.
The same guys that poisoned Navalny.
And this is Unit 2599, I think.
Yeah, I think that's... It's like Unit, and it's a bunch of numbers.
3-5-0-0.
Yeah. 2-4-6-0-1.
That's what I was waiting for.
You're talking about Jean Valjean?
Yeah. Well, I was singing Hair, but what I was really thinking of was that song from Les Mis.
That's so funny.
But this group in Russia was trying out these like acoustic tests.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like the big story here, is that like finally we've linked an actual group who was doing tests that pretty much encompass what
Havana Syndrome was.
Yeah.
Even though the intelligence agencies had dismissed it as psychosomatic, you know, they didn't disagree that maybe people were feeling something, but they thought maybe it was like not a foreign attack of sorts on our diplomats and spies. Yeah. Now it looks like it. Oh, well, we still don't know, but yeah, we're going to have more to talk about that later. It's just like, there's actual news coming out, guys. There's Serial with Guantanamo Bay.
Someone that experienced Havana Syndrome described the sound as a marble rolling down a drain,
mm-hmm.
which for some reason sent shivers down my spine.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does to me too.
Because that seems like such a like non-sound.
Right.
But you said it was loud. You think it'd be loud?
Well, if it's happening in your brain, I think anything happening in your brain is pretty loud.
Oh, this man whispered into my ear and scrambled my brain.
But, you know, we don't have to swallow the ocean here. We could just take little sips and put a bookmark in News from the Motherland for now.
Yeah.
And we can get to some more.
We've done about 90 miles of ocean, honey, and that's about the distance.
Yeah, time to swim back another 90 miles of this pop culture ocean we're about to embark
Call
on.
Call us Diane Nyad because we're swimming.
Amen. Amen. What do you want to cover your gay items first, or do you want to cover World According to Jules?
Let's do gay items. Let's switch it up.
All right.
Even though I don't know, I mean, these are just pop culture things, which I guess in
gay
in general. There was actually a funny headline today where Shakira kind of talked negatively about Barbie. Did you see
like
that?
the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like non-Americans were not huge fans of Barbie because the feminist agenda of it is one that is very specifically American.
Ding, 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 Brian. That's what she didn't like about it. She thought
Shakira,
that it was...
Shakira, my girl!
I know. She's, like, always right. Even when she's...
Her lips literally do not lie.
Even though she was...
What'd she do?
Does she have a tax haven in Panama or something?
I mean, why wouldn't she?
Why wouldn't she?
Yeah. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying, why would Shakira not hoard wealth?
There are worse tyrants out there than Shakira.
Yeah. Hoarding a lot more wealth.
But, she said that she likes pop culture when it attempts to empower. Let's see if I have it here. The page reloaded. That's why I stopped. Well, okay. So she said, my sons absolutely hated it. They felt that it was emasculating. And I agree to a certain extent. I'm raising two boys. I want them to feel powerful too while respecting women. I like pop culture when it attempts to empower women without robbing men of their possibility to be men.
And that's really not what the vibe is right now.
Of course not, but she's right, and that was my issue with Barbie, is like
the cock shame.
Well, and they cast all of Barbie's power in opposition to like masculinity.
Yeah, no, it was,
and like all of a sudden Ken is a villain because he likes horses.
I know,
like he likes cowboy culture, like that's what ruins him.
So are we back to not being mad about it not winning or being nominated for all these Oscars or whatever? Like what's the pulse of the...
I mean, it should have absolutely won the design categories against
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And how does that...
I thought design was a slam dunk for it.
And, like, I've said it before, and I know it's populist, but, like, I think when a movie is that history-breaking, it should have a nomination. I'm not saying give it to it, but there are 10 slots. There are 10 slots to fill.
No, but I feel like out of the fervor of the success, the financial success, and the vibes of it, and, you know, the jokes and the Barbenheimer stuff, you know, now we... And, you know, Oscars are gone, so we don't have anyone to simp to anymore, but... The, you know, we talked, it's not a perfect movie, not just the themes and the, you know, the cock shame like we talked about, but that is a giant Mattel commercial. And, you know, there's also like just moments of jerkiness from a storytelling standpoint. So it's like, hey, it was a fun movie. We had a good time. We don't have to like weep that, you know, at its presence. And ultimately, it's a commercial. And that's what I really want people who
die
on this hill to really understand.
But it has political messaging, like pointedly so. And so it's a double-edged sword because, like, yes, the political messaging is annoying and I find it condescending. But the flip side of it is you have people like Shakira 8 months out still talking about it. So it helps the movie's bottom line ultimately by being that ideologically driven.
I mean, but I think that she.
But it's alienating too.
And what I've clocked is a lot of non-Americans not being huge fans of this movie, or having issues in the messaging.
But don't get them started on Anatomy of a Fall. Oh boy, they loved that one.
Did you not?
I mean, whatever. Like, again, I don't think she. I don't think
it's
that
just
director
small cinema when we don't see a lot of small cinema. And I think people
sure,
like that,
sure. But I, yeah. But she got the nomination, the director's nomination that I think should have gone
over
to
Greta.
Yeah, that's why I'm pitting those two movies against each other in this context.
Well, and it was also, what was it, Swedish, Anatomy of a Fall? Or?
It was like a collab between different countries. I think it was French and German.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, classic European collab.
Mm-hmm. But hey, I'm at least glad that people, and okay, I don't want to get into this. I've known a few people now and people and friends of friends, and they're all men. They're all of a certain age and they've all killed themselves. And people kill themselves when they feel like there's a world that is not for them. And if we are going to advance any kind of feminist equality, equity agenda, we need to make sure that everyone, even people who look like oppressors, feel like they have a place. And that is not a popular thing to say.
I know.
But
so Barbie kills young men.
I'm not saying that.
I know.
But you know what I'm saying? It's a cultural attitude. And you know, like my friend in particular, his demons, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not just him. You know, there's been actually a lot of others. People I've known, people other people have known. And it's just the demography and how similar it all is needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I think that we've said this before. I think it'll change. It's coming around.
But it's too late for a lot of people. And, you know, maybe we have to bend too far one way, you know, overcorrect one way to correct the other way. But there is a perception that, like, and I don't disagree, but there's a perception, it seems, that only women have mental health problems or self-esteem problems or...
Shakira's sons deserve to feel enfranchised, too.
Or just, like... Not
with their illegal,
not
attacked, illegally hoarded money,
not attacked by art that everyone seems to like.
Yeah. And art shouldn't be agreeable necessarily, you know, but it is Barbie.
No, but
maybe it should be.
And it's not Barbie. It is the cultural dogma. And it's a cultural, really anti-male dogma that has emerged since 2018.
Yeah.
And I know I have a dog in this fight. But I keep my
you
mouth
are
shut.
Enough.
But I keep my mouth shut for the most part because I don't want anyone to think I'm like some men's rights activist, and I'm not.
But it's hard out here for a pimp.
Just a dude, just a regular dude, because all the animosity towards white men really belongs to a certain class of people.
So you know that feeling I talked about where I felt relatively passive next to the person sitting next to me?
This is happening right now.
This is happening again.
I don't do this often
at
all.
I see your ginger freckled face getting redder and redder.
I don't do this often at all.
I know.
And that's why it's important to me, just because it's so fresh to me too.
Yeah. I didn't mean to have such a dismissive yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
You want to talk more about your friend's suicides? Because that seems to be the impulse.
No, that's, I think I said everything I need to say for now.
Okay.
Yeah, we can move on.
Okay.
Into the next.
There's another news story.
In the.
That.
Gay item of.
The week. Beep, beep. Beep. This one's less gay than Shakira's son's not liking Barbie.
Yeah.
If you could believe it. But it is Bruno Mars is indebted to MGM Casino.
Like, the sentence is funny. I'm sorry, Bruno. I really don't mean you ill.
Of course but not. He's a Boricua Bay. We love
yeah,
him.
Yeah, yeah. Especially, but anytime a major star is in a contract dispute with like a major entity.
$50 million.
See, and I knew it would be an exorbitant amount.
Because he had announced a multi-year residency with that resort, with MGM in 2016.
And he dropped out or some shit?
No, I mean, he was doing it for a while, mm-hmm. and I think it was during that time that he racked up the debt of $50 million.
Oh, like gambling?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Bruno.
Even though, like, listen, I get it. Like, if you were living at the casino and you're like, oh, it's on my tab.
But how much was his contract? You know, like, how much?
He made $90 million a year off the deal he did.
Okay, so he could. But even, though $90 million is $50 million cash when it's, like, you net $500 if that, in a year. So
the singer only makes $1.5 million per night after taxes.
I mean, you know, so
okay. Whatever. That's a month and a half of your residency,
yeah,
babe.
I've blown money on worse, yeah. You know. All right. You're
yeah,
fine.
I'm going to a 2-year graduate program, okay?
Yeah, yeah. But
that's how I'm paying off my debt.
The amount of net worth that took off of me is way more than...
I'm paying $80,000 to pay back $90,000, honey.
Yeah, yeah. My relative net worth, yeah, of what that did, of dropping the bucket. This ain't no MGM. That's so funny, dude.
Yeah,
I was really worried.
And I like him.
I was really worried for Bruno because I'm like, 50, does he have that on him like right now? But it sounds like he was really cozy with this residency. But dude, like, you gotta know you're deep in the hole. And I feel bad for gambling addicts because they're addicted, I hate to say it, but addicted to losing a lot of times. And like, there's a self-esteem, there's a crossover in self-esteem with like gamblers. Like, a lot of people theorize that a lot of gamblers hate themselves and they feel like they deserve to lose, and that's why they set themselves up.
Well, I'm sure
up for
a residency
this.
After a point in Vegas is pretty humbling. If you're Bruno Mars, like, it's not Adele, you know. I love him. I'm sorry I said that, Bruno. I know you're listening.
What is Adele so clearly a bigger act, or
don't you think? I feel like she's just raking it in. I'd be curious to see how much she makes a night off her residency. But it's more than 1.5. It's got to be.
Dude, 1.5 a night is crazy.
That's crazy.
And I'm just trying to think of the economics, like the tickets. I mean, how much money is in tickets are being sold a night there, you know?
Yeah.
Is it that much? Or is it just offset, you know, is all the gambling money that comes in just like so much, so lucrative that 1.5 a night is a drop in the bucket, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sure that's how he racked up such a debt. He was like, well, I'm making 1.5 a night, you know?
No, of course. It's so easy. Like, why wouldn't, and it, like, what, just think about it. You're making... You know, you owe $50. You make $1.50 a day. Like, you're there for years. You're like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Another Caribbean man with impulse issues. Like, where's the story?
This is actually the most non-story pop culture story you might have brought.
But I like Bruno Mars, like, as a meme, you know? Like, there's a funny photo of Pete Wentz from Fall Out Boy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
who's, like, now pretty irrelevant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this was taken in, like, 2005, and in the background is Bruno Mars, like, getting...
Really young Bruno
getting
Mars,
all excited,
yeah.
Like, that That's... Pete Wentz is in front of him. It's a charming photo.
Yeah, it's fun to see. And I've always liked him. I feel like at his peak, he was higher than Adele has ever... But I think he peaked about 10 years ago.
Maybe. I mean, they don't play Adele songs the way they do Bruno Mars songs at weddings.
Uptown Funk? No, I mean, dude, we always open with Uptown.
That Michelle Pfeiffer, that White Gold?
No, I'm saying when I was a wedding MC, we played a ton of Bruno Mars.
Yeah.
And it always opened with Uptown Funk.
That's what I'm saying. They're playing Bruno Mars more at weddings than Adele.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So why would you think that Adele's like clearly the bigger act?
Because I'm gay? I don't know.
Okay,
like...
fair enough. Although Bruno Mars has like a queer adjacent aesthetic, though.
Like,
I bet
I bet Adele's won more Grammys and stuff. Not that translates to like more sales necessarily, sure. And lamentably,
I would say, you know, Adele's probably does have more Grammys. But just, I hate to say this, but do people pay much attention to the Grammys anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, I was first.
Meryl
threatened.
Streep was at this year's Grammys. That was exciting.
Interesting. I was threatened when I first learned that Doja Cat existed.
You were what?
I felt threatened.
Why?
That someone named Doja Cat could be famous. My instant thought was like, this generation's not for me anymore.
I felt that way with Ice Spice. Mm-hmm. And I met like
Doja Cat was my
a young
Ice Spice.
Zoomer guy at a bar that was like, you don't know who Ice Spice is? And I was like, dude, like, you're talking about her like she's Don Rickles. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, she's
He's like, who's Don Rickles?
Yeah, exactly.
No, yeah. So by the time I like Doja Cat. By the time I've come around to accept Doja Cat and my place now as the elder statesman of entertainment, by the time Ice Spice came around, I was prepared for it.
Yeah, you were browbeaten by the Zoomer movement.
Well.
I saw Doja Cat once.
Where?
At a
no one knows what she looks
at a
like.
Fashion show that I was invited to. No one knows what she looks like. Yeah, my friend Seth invited me to a fashion. Well,
she's in a different like. It's like Lady Gaga. I don't know what Lady Gaga looked like the first 10 years she was around.
Well, she's I haven't seen Gaga in person, but Doja Cat is tiny. She's
oh, really?
Tiny, gorgeous,
yeah.
Gorgeous and tiny, like they all are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's funny.
just like Bruno Mars.
Your Reese Witherspoon, your Gorgeous Bruno Mars. Tiny.
And I feel like Bruno Mars was the original short king. Like, I feel like that's what...
No, Prince was.
Oh,
sorry.
Really? Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, like, he started, like, the short king dialogue
movement. Yeah, online. In a modern context.
Which was fun explaining to my brother, who's relatively short, what a short king was. It's like, he's like, so I'm a short king? I'm like, depending on how I'm feeling.
And he is. He definitely is.
He is.
And he found his redwood lady. Short kings climb those redwoods. Lady. Yeah, exactly. Your brother and
he's
Tessa.
Just a little teddy bear hugging a redwood tree.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Aw, maybe I'll do like a little children's book with them.
About the man who loves the redwood. And they had a baby.
And people said, surely such a small bear can't climb such a tall tree. It's like, oh says, my God, it's a metaphor for your brother's sex life. I'd give you 5%, Andre.
You know, Andre, you always want to go equity. I think it's a good deal. Yeah, get points on the back end.
When that Barnes & Noble deal hits, honey.
Yeah, people are going to try to ask you for a buyout and a release up front. Don't sign
it. Don't do it.
Talk to me.
Yeah, don't do what Brian did. Don't sign that release
don't
up front.
Don't take the buyout.
So that's our little Boricua Bay news.
Mm. Do you have any more pop culture news, or is it the
Those were the ones that I guffawed at the most.
Guffaw.
Guffawed.
Guffaw is among my favorite onomatopoeias. All right. Well, that means it's time for The World According to Jules.
That's the kind of world I want to live in.
And this is where I ask Julian a series of... Well, I just read you a couple of headlines. And then you respond with
unmitigated thoughts.
Unfiltered, candid responses. Are you ready, Julian? Are you ready, Julian?
I'm ready.
We're going to just keep on doing the Galactic Empire.
I was like, he's doing his Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
I wasn't born yesterday. I know what your Emperor Palpatine sounds like.
I was born at night, but not last night. Okay. I read Julian a headline. He's going to give me his unfiltered thoughts. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First headline from my little neighborhood in Central Texas. Kyle, Texas seeks visitors named Kyle for a world record attempt. The city of Kyle, Texas announced it is making another attempt at breaking the Guinness World Records for the largest same name gathering with an official gathering of the Kyles. Your thoughts?
There is a Julian, California, and I dream of it. And the other day, well, last weekend, I was in San Diego, and I looked at my Google Maps, and I was about an hour and a half out of Julian, California, and I thought to myself, what's to stop me? And then I realized what's to stop me is that once I go, I can no longer idealize the place that has my name. That being said, if there was a Julian convention in Julian, California, I would go, because Julian's fuck.
Time. Julian's fuck is the takeaway in that story. And you're not wrong, man. Why is every Julian so horny?
I know, right?
Every Julian and every Pisces, and you're both. You're just a perfect circle of Venn diagram of horniness.
Yeah, I will say, I have hooked up with a Julian, but what I was going to say is what I noticed most about Julian's out in the street is we're all very like gregarious, like bright.
Very outgoing. Every Julian I've ever met.
Right? Yeah. What's that about?
Well, most Julians I've met, I don't know if this is your case, mostly Hispanic. Is that the case for you?
I suppose.
And they got the Latin.
Swarthy for sure. I know a black Julian, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That I catered with once. He was.
Do I know a white Julian? Do we know any purely white Julians?
No.
That's insane.
Well, Julian Assange.
And he is
he's alabaster.
Transparent.
He's transparent. Yeah.
And I feel like just got more and more gray and pale the longer he's been in Russia too.
Yeah. Good for Kyle, Texas, by the way.
If this sounds familiar, by the way, it's because I actually did this as a World According to Jules story about a year ago.
What?
And they'd attempted this, but they did not reach their
next capacity. Gosh, I'm so worried about my memory that I don't remember that.
It's okay. And you know what? I only learned this. I'm not even bullshitting you because I saw this headline and I was like, didn't they try this before? And they said this was a second attempt. I'm like, oh, crazy. Before we recorded and I'd accidentally hit a page down button. So it took me all the way to my earliest notes from Guantanamo Bay. And I literally saw Kyle, Texas gathering Kyle.
Wow.
I was like, oh, fuck, this has been a story.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Let's see how many times you could type Kyle in that document. Maybe you could win a world record.
Don't. Yeah.
Number of Kyles
typed in typed Google Doc. You ready for next story?
I am.
All right. A UK comedian was told to remove a hot dog from his Subway poster over a junk food ban. For context, there's a comedian for his poster. He had him eating a hot dog. UK has laws against advertising junk food in certain areas, and I guess the Subway is one of those areas, so they made him change the ad to not include him ostensibly advertising. He wasn't advertising hot dogs. He's advertising a show, but there was a hot dog there. They said, "Oi, you can't do that. You can't do that. Take it out." And so he did. Your thoughts?
Great accent.
You got the silly-hatted Bobby. You know, Hitler was a bad, bad man.
I feel the way towards food advertising as strict Muslims would feel towards lingerie advertising.
Mm.
I'm completely scandalized by it. I find it disgusting because it brings out such a visceral desire in me when I see those pussy wet fries.
Mm.
And that cream-laden burger.
Mm.
And it falls and bounces in a way that's almost like mammary glands.
Mm. Yeah.
Almost like they're being shook.
It's like, why do they want me to fuck this food?
Yeah, exactly. I wish fast food had never been invented, because for as much joy as I felt around it, I've also felt shame.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I mean, they create that stuff to get you hooked. Like, we know this. This isn't even a conspiracy at all. It's like we know that they know the tricks to get your attention and ultimately colonize your brain.
My one issue with this is they're going after a comedian, because it's like, come on, people, they're larger targets.
Right. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, where does, you know, laws should be made to protect people. And if you know that a company has data to exploit the human psyche, and you're like, okay, well, let's make it so we can't do that, you know, but then it's like, then there's a line of like, you know, and UK doesn't have the US Constitution, so their version of free speech is different from ours. So, you know, an American would look at this and just be so indignant of like,
free speech.
Yeah, that's my hot dog, you know, but
also, unlike those advertisements that I talk about, this like struggling comedian putting it on a promotional poster is not glamorizing fast food, and it's not sexualizing it and making it like this desirable thing.
Sure, but he's not a struggling comedian. His name's Ed Gamble, so I just don't want you to think that they like were punching too far down here. And also, the publicity behind all this is way better for him, because
Ed Gamble.
Yeah, exactly. Also, you're saying his name, we're talking about it.
That's also probably Bruno Mars's alias in the casino.
There's Ed Gamble. It's just like Bruno Mars and like, I don't know why.
The state of Nevada v. Ed Gamble.
I imagine his like face like completely bandaged with like glasses over his eyes and stuff like that. Like he's like a mystery.
Yeah, it looks like the Unabomber.
He's just like a 5'2", like fully bandaged body cast person. Yeah.
Ed Gamble. That's a star's name.
He throws a smoke bomb and then he's Bruno Mars all of a sudden. He's Hannah Montana. He goes from Ed Gamble.
Yeah, we've never seen Bruno Mars or Ed Gamble in the same room at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, I've never heard of him. I'm guessing the reason why you have is because you're a stand-up.
Well, whereas I'm not going to lie.
Ed Gamble.
No, I'm not going to lie. I probably should have known his name more. I mean, he is a UK comic, so, you know, he's probably just based out of there, and we don't know.
The only one I know is Hannah Gadsby. I know she's
right.
Like,
and much of an Australian. Right. And also not much of a comedian. But in this case, maybe someone who maybe I should know, but I didn't, because of this news story. So that's why this turns out to be the best thing that ever happened.
Did you see his material?
I have not. We can watch it after this.
My expectations aren't high, because, like, I wouldn't pose with a hot dog.
Oh, and I'm not going to lie. You know, British comedy is, British stand-up is a lot more one-man showy and a lot more, I don't know.
It's giving Gallagher. Like, it's like so sticky to be like, here's me with a hot dog.
Very sticky.
Like, do they wear Cosby sweaters
and
when they go
like
up on stage?
They always seem to come up, and I'm sorry, British comics, y'all are great. I'm just saying the general ethos of, like, UK stand-up is like, let me introduce you myself. My name is blah, 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 and I was born in blah, blah, blah. Now, when I was a young man,
the thing about Debussy in the summer.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's like, they're almost talking in limericks, and then it's like, the jokes, they're just very theatrical, you know, and it's not always like the sexiest, funniest, hardest punchlines. And American comedy, and look, stand-up was invented in America, so we should be good at it.
That's cool. I didn't realize that.
It was
like vaudeville?
It was, well, Borscht, you know,
Belt?
Out of vaudeville, and also Jews
in the Borscht
Belt after the Holocaust.
Yeah,
who were like
upstate New York in like the Adirondacks.
And literally, and Catskills.
That's the mountain region.
Literally talking about, like, in a sense, joking about their experiences in the Holocaust and shit like that. And, you know, the trauma of being Jewish in this time. And
David Krumholtz was on Marc Maron, I think, on yesterday's episode. It was really recent. And they talked about how you don't see as many Jewish comedians anymore. And Mark theorized that that's because of antidepressants. Because, like,
the, I mean, I see,
cause, like, Jews really did, like, invent, like, modern American comedy.
They
the
did.
Way that
oh,
we understand
100%.
It.
Yeah.
So I guess Ed Gamble should try to be Jewish if he wants me to listen to him.
Yeah.
Ed Gambliski? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a way to make Gamble Jewish.
I
it's
guess,
a yeah. really hard name to Jew up. It's a really hard name to Jewify.
Yeah. Yeah, Ed doesn't strike me as particularly Jewish.
No.
Maybe Eddie. Maybe when we're starting to cook with oil, if it's Eddie Gamble.
Eddie, but that's like an Italian guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are Italian Jews.
There are.
And they have wonderful weddings.
Sure. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, speaking from experience, I guess. But
definitely.
Yeah. He seems like someone who'd be at war with the Jewish mafia, not someone who's in the Jewish mafia, you know? But I wish war upon no one.
That's so
big of me.
Big of you.
I know. I know. It's a hot take, but that's what you came here for. Do you have any closing thoughts for our listeners, Julian? We're about coming to time.
I don't think so. I feel good about it.
I do too. Thank you guys so much for keeping up with us. We want to strike while the iron's hot, and follow us, like us, rate us on Spotify. Just please hit all the fucking buttons that boost our SEO and refer us, you know, word of mouth. That's our best
Send
friend.
Them to all the Bruno Mars fans. Send to all the Adele fans.
And be on the lookout for
and
that.
And let us know which had more fans.
Yeah, let us know your opinion on who's the bigger deal. I'm going to put out a poll. Who's the bigger deal? No more context between Bruno Mars and Adele, and see what it is. And if you see Ed Gamble, watch out, because that guy is dropping mad money at the
I'm looking casino. Right now on Spotify to see Adele is the 40th most listened to artist on Spotify in the world.
Okay.
And Bruno Mars,
I think anything within the top 150 is amazing.
You think Bruno Mars broke 100?
Probably not.
He's 11th in the world.
Get out of here.
So there you go.
I won.
So good luck paying off your gambling debt, Adele.
Yeah. Yeah, you better not.
Adele Gamble.
You better go straight home after your night performing, honey, because you can't afford it.
Yeah, you better go back to England to watch Ed Gamble's set.
Yeah.
His hot dogless set.
I'm so sorry, Adele.
That's why Adele moved here, is because the UK banned fast food. That's
you bitch.
Such a stupid dated joke.
Yeah.
She's lost weight.
Oh, she looks great. And poor girl got shamed for it.
I know.
Yeah.
Culture was whack.
I mean, I think people still would. I think that's where the culture still is, man.
I don't know if they'd fat shame her. Not in my circles on the
internet. No, but they would, you know, if she, like, anyone losing weight, they'd skinny shame her again. Like, we're still in the skinny shaming part.
I don't know.
They skinny shamed her.
It's more just like, I hope she's feeling good, or, like, you know, hopefully she's healthier.
I mean, I did see people who were like, how dare Adele turn her back on, like, the plus size
the big
community.
Girls. Yeah. Well, they've got Lizzo.
Who then got Me Too'd or whatever. It's just, we can't win, damn it.
I think she said she was going to quit.
Lizzo?
Yeah, I don't believe it.
No.
She's kind of pulling a Larry David. She's like, it's my last season. I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah, people tend to do that when they're in trouble so that people pretend to
get off their ass.
Whatever. Yeah. We're from the Guantanamo Bay's podcast. I'm Brian Bogart.
And I'm Julian Grizzly.
Thank you. And hasta luego.